by a liberal, they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind. Someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions. Someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, and their civil liberties. If that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. You've tuned in to the Jeff Ferry Show right here on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. It is Tuesday, the 12th of August. Glad you tuned in. Lots of stuff on today's show for you. Some old friends stopping by and some new guests you haven't heard from before. Lots of topics to cover in today's program. Lots of stories in the news from all over the place. And we got some stuff to give away, too. We're going to give away three pair of Melissa Etheridge tickets today. And here's what we're going to do. Anytime you hear a Melissa Etheridge song as a bumper music, just give us a call. The first one to identify that wins the pair of tickets. We have them here at studio. All you do is get down to the studio sometime between now and Monday and pick up your pair of tickets. Phone number here, 602-258-8800, 1-800-989-1480. So when you hear the Melissa Etheridge, give us a call. Also, I want to point out, I'm going to be arrested, and I know about it ahead of time. It's true. On Thursday morning, folks from MDA, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, will be picking me up and hauling me off. And I'll be incarcerated, man. It's up to you to spring me. What they've done is they've set up a website, and you can go and make donations to MDA, to Jerry's Kids. And once I meet my target, then I'll be set free, be able to come back and do my radio show as scheduled. So all you got to do is go to 1480kphx.com, go to my little corner of the website. You can click on down. I give you a link over to the MDA website. Please go over there, make a donation. It's a great cause. And I'm honored to be participating in this event. Basically, they're going around. They're arresting a couple of different athletes. I think actually the sheriff is getting arrested. A bunch of different athletes, politicians, business leaders, people around town are being hauled in tomorrow. And you can spring me. I can't hear you, Ian.
you're participating in an event with the sheriff?
I know. It's scary.
I just thought I was
it involves
like
an arrest.
It's like, and it involves an arrest. I'm like, wait a minute, Jeff. What are you getting yourself into?
I know. Well, I didn't realize the sheriff was involved until today.
All right.
I signed up about a week or two ago. So, but anyway, that's going on. Go check it out. It's for a great cause for Jerry's Kids. Obviously, we're winding down on they're trying to raise, I think, about $40,000 right here in Phoenix with this program, part of the big telethon that goes on Labor Day weekend. So I'm doing my part. I hope you'll pitch in and do yours. Let's see where to start here. A couple of stories I wanted to get to that kind of caught my attention. And again, I have a lot of different stories to throw out there today. In New York City, the NYPD is considering a new plan called Operation Sentinel. Essentially, what they're going to do is photograph the license plate of every vehicle that enters Manhattan and scan all that information. And they'll store it, apparently, only for 1 month, they're saying. We'll store all the information in a Manhattan facility. They're going to use radiation detectors at all the different crossings into Manhattan, all the different bridges and tunnels. They're also planning on security changes, include movable roadblocks and lots more, thousands more, public and private cameras. So New York City's cracking down somewhat. Also saw a story out there today. Apparently, on Friday, FBI Director Robert Mueller placed two phone calls, one to Bill Keller, executive editor of the New York Times, the other to Len Downey, executive editor of the Washington Post, to inform them that the Bureau had spied on reporters while they were working in Indonesia for their respective newspapers. The records were apparently sought as part of a terrorism investigation, but the FBI did not explain what was being investigated or why the reporter's phone records were considered relevant. Again, the Justice Department kind of looks after these things, and the Justice Department is the reason we know about this. They called it to the attention of the FBI, and essentially, getting any sort of records that has to do with listening in on journalists requires approval of the Deputy Attorney General, and apparently those approvals were not in place. So again, another chilling aspect that our government is spying on journalists. Now, a lot of journalists, they have sources that they speak to, anonymous sources within different governments. And now the FBI is in on this, too. Obviously, quite a chill. We also learned from the House Energy and Commerce Committee, committee member Ed Markey, talking about this, apparently several internet and broadband companies have acknowledged that they're using targeted advertising technology without letting their consumers know. Quoting Markey says, increasingly there are no limits technologically as to what a company can do in terms of collecting information and then selling it as a commodity to other providers. Both Yahoo, Google, and Microsoft have disclosed that they engage in some form of behavioral targeting. And my fourth story in relation to this takes us all the way to West Helena, Arkansas. The West Helena neighborhood of Helena, Arkansas is in a police lockdown. Apparently over a, they haven't figured out if it's a $6 or an $8 debt. Feud started earlier in the week. A man released from jail refused to pay money back to his neighbor, $6 or $8. Apparently a group of the neighbors jumped the man, shot a bunch of guns in the air, and, you know, just sort of made made a lot of noise and a lot of hassle. Apparently, the man came back with his own group of friends. They fired guns in the air over the other guy's house. So the mayor of that town, a James Valley, called for a lockdown. It's a 10-block neighborhood just northwest of the city hall. No loitering, no walking the streets, no quote-unquote hanging out. It's something akin to martial law in that particular area, Mayor Valley said. It got to the point where somebody was going to get seriously hurt or killed if we didn't do something. Quite remarkable. According to Fred Fielder, the police chief, says people in the area have evaded police by falsely reporting criminal activity in other parts of town. And falsely reporting shots fired from vehicles that don't exist. Police said they're using common sense when dealing with pedestrians in the lockdown area. If they're polite and have good reason to be out or are walking, then police will let them go. If they are suspicious or have a, quote, smart mouth, they'll be told to get inside, leave the area, or be arrested. Wow. It's amazing. So a lockdown. Can you imagine something like that happening 10 years ago anywhere in America? The police would go in and just suddenly shut down your neighborhood, patrol the streets with M16s. And not much outcry about it, though. We seem quite content to accept these little erosions of our personal freedom and liberties. We're right back. I am the eye in the sky, looking at you. I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules, dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind. And I don't need to see anymore to know that I can read.
Stephanie Miller at 6 a.m., Tom Hartman at 9, weekday mornings on 1480 KPHX.
From the California shore, where the mighty ocean roars, to the lands of the Hopi and the Sioux, I walk the desert sands, across the Rio Grande, all just to get to you. I had stumbled on the plain, staggered in the wind, stood at a crossroad or two, cried to a river, swept to the sea, all just to get to you. I ran too hard, I played too rough, I gave my love, not near enough. I bled to red, I cried.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around, folks. The Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. It's 20 after. How many stories are out there like this are there? You know, police abuse. The slow erosion of our liberties happening under our noses. You know, my son is a huge fan of the zombie movie. I know, this is a tangent. Huge fan of the zombie movie, and one of the recurring themes is all in zombie movies is that sense of you're all alone, and you don't know who's real, who's turned already. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like a common sci-fi theme. That sense of the whole world's gone crazy around you, and nobody else sees it but you. I find myself living that same anxiety over and 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 over again. You know, how can towns in Arkansas just lock down a 10-block neighborhood? How do a couple of undercover cops beat a guy, knock his teeth out for knocking off a hat? How do we get to the point where you know there's no sense of accountability? I feel like we're sort of, it's a subtle oppression. You know, you can't compare it to what the Soviet citizens went through in their heyday. It's a lot more subtle form of fascism and repression, where we don't even really seem to be aware of it. You know, the old frog boiling in the pot of water. I could do nothing but stories like that on this show. I could come on here for 3 hours a day and just collect news from around the country of people being beat up by cops, tasered to death. Basic human dignity and human rights being completely neglected at every level of our government and our society. From the interrogation room that sits in the basement of the White House to every small town sheriff who believes he's king. It seems like it's just our world is shrinking around us. With respect to our liberties and our freedoms and our rights, our basic rights. And I'm struggling to find ways to talk about it. Struggling to find the language. To find the perspective. That breaks through, that snaps us out of it, that wakes us up. And I'm not sure where to take it anymore. I'm beyond rage fatigue. This is a I don't know. It's at a whole different level. I think there are bigger questions at work here. How we think about our freedoms, our liberties. How we think about our culture, our society, how we function as a people. I don't know. Let's take a few phone calls. Joe in Tempe.
Hey.
Hey, Joe.
Every time you talk about torture or you talk about police, you lose me because I want my police officers to pound these felons.
And I didn't know they're felons, though. I mean, they're pounding
you
people.
You can tell just by looking at them.
Oh, come on, Joe. You can tell by what are the cues? You're looking
at
somebody.
They got funny hair, tattoos.
I got a tattoo. I got funny hair.
I've seen a picture of you. Your hair's not funny like some of these young freaks today.
Mm-hmm. Well.
And let me tell you, did you see what John Edwards did? You know, you liberals, you can never stop and put your hormones in order.
Us liberals, Joe, do me a favor. You got to Google, right?
Yeah, Google.
Republican.
You got a wife
sex
with cancer, and you liberals, he's talking about two Americas, and he's out doing some, and he's not even a good-looking woman he's doing. I mean, what is that all about, Jeff? Come on.
Well, good-looking's a relative. I mean, what?
I look like a side of
beef. Why are you so worked up about John Edwards?
Because I couldn't believe it. I listened to him in the primer, and I'd never vote for him, but I can't believe what I'm seeing. He's cheating on his wife, just like Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and just like John Vitter,
Larry
Craig, just like
I know none
Newt
of us
Gingrich,
like John McCain, but I think we should all
just
vote
like
for
John
him
McCain.
Just to spite you rotten.
Didn't John McCain cheat on his wife? Is that you okay with that?
You sexual
Joe,
you perverted
Joe.
Liberals.
Joe, you okay with John McCain cheating on his wife?
Hey, he's a Republican.
Yeah, right. So he gets away with it.
Let me tell you, I've had a change after seeing John Edwards. I realize you can't. You liberals are never going to satisfy your hormones.
But John McCain's affairs are okay with you. But John Edwards are intolerable.
I don't
right?
like John McCain, but you know
right.
what?
But his affairs are cool with you.
Liberals.
But it's when a liberal screws around his wife, that's a real problem.
And I hope the police beat the hell out of you liberals. How's that?
Yeah, that's beautiful, Joe. Joe's got angry again. I guess they changed his meds. I don't know. James in Avondale, you're up.
Hello, how you doing, Jeff?
All right.
You know, they always like to say that the police are putting their life on the line. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I believe they are putting the citizens' life on the line.
Yep.
But, just listening to this ignoramus that just called in, to show you how Republicans and conservatives think. They like to accuse black people of being racist. Now, black people can't be racist because they have no power. But they say that blacks are racist because they are voting for Obama because he's black. Well, that's not the way I've heard it before. They said blacks are fools because they're Democrats, and blacks
right.
are voting for Obama because they are Democrats and he's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch these shows like Hardball and all that other kind of stuff all the time, and I see more black Republican analysts than I see black Democratic analysts.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what is this thing of all of a sudden blacks are racist? Well, how many jobs have the blacks kept white people from getting, because everywhere I go, I see more white people on the job than I do black people
right.
on the job. So, you know, this thing of you know, they're doing all this trying to cover up, you know, stuff that they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ridiculous, you know.
Yeah.
All right.
And again, that's exactly, it's the, you know, it's beyond the pot calling the kettle black. No bad pun there, but.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. But it is. It's the hypocrisy. And I think that's what a lot of people have pointed to, whether you're talking about John McCain or Bush standing up yesterday, pointing a finger at the Russians, for being, you know, aggressive. It's the hypocrisy over and over again.
It's just like this guy talking about Democrats and their hormones and cheating and going on. Well, it was one Republican was damn fool enough to confess to adultery, mm-hmm. said because he wanted Clinton to come. This guy that was going to be Speaker of the House, I remember Livingston or somebody, and he came out and confessed that he had committed adultery, and that because he did, then Clinton should have confessed to committing adultery.
Right, right. Unbelievable. Hey, James,
yeah,
thanks for the call, buddy.
Okay,
gotta go.
Thank you.
Take care. We're out of time. We'll be right back after these messages. Stick around.
And keep your hands to yourself.
My friends and men, my friend, and our dear friends who have, my friends, by our friends in the other party, my friends, my friends, my friends, my friends, my friends. My friends, that my friends see my friends.
To me, coming from you, friend is a four-letter word, and is the only part of the word that I heard. Call me morbid or absurd.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking around, folks, on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. That music means our buddy Cliff Schechter is here with us. Cliff wrote The Real McCain. Hey, Cliff, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Interesting to see the McCain connection in this story coming out of Georgia. I don't know if you saw the president of Georgia actually citing McCain in his address to the people in Tbilisi today.
No, I actually didn't. I was out on the road today. You'll have to, I mean, I obviously know about the McCain connection with his foreign policy advisor,
right.
Randy Shinneman,
right.
as an advisor for Georgia, which is the kind of thing we all need to wonder and worry about, which is how many of these conflicts of interest will be posed to McCain so we can't trust him to come to an honest decision.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have to fill me in on this one.
Well, apparently McCain gave a speech today, and he says, invoking Kennedy, today we are all Georgians. and so the president of Georgia gets up in front of his crowd and says, and John McCain even said, today we are all Georgians.
Amazing.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
No, go ahead. I mean,
I'm just not shocked. I mean, again, you know, I've been sort of beating this drum for a while now on your show and everywhere else I go, which is that contrary to the image, the manufactured image of this guy and the common belief, the irony of his saying that Obama would lose a war to win a campaign, mm-hmm. when this is a guy that will literally, much like George Bush did with 9/11, Iraq, and everything else, that McCain is a guy that will politicize virtually anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he wanted to talk tough against Russia in the past, so he talked about kicking them out of the G8. He talked about refusing to talk to North Korea to sound tough on them. And this kind of stuff has real-world implications, as does his attacks on Barack Obama, painting him as sort of an ally of Hamas and other things. If Obama's elected, has that affect our relationship with the Arab world? Has it affect our relationship with Israel? And, McCain wouldn't stop for a second to take any of that into account. All that matters is his ambition.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a pretty large nuclear power here in Russia, and it may, we don't know what's going to happen. We know Putin still pulls a lot of the strings, and so the truth of the matter is that it should be something we should be worried about. And anybody who believes that those on the right who've been talking about how wonderful they are in national security the last 7 years have given half a damn about cleaning up loose nukes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been certain terrific people who are conservatives like Dick Lugar, but for the most part, the Bush conservatives haven't. So, I mean, there's a lot that could go badly there. Let's put it that way.
Well, I also think it's odd that, how many other of these entanglements are there with McCain, where someone who's key to his campaign, one of his top advisors, has some connection to a foreign government that is going to weigh in, not necessarily on what's best for the country, but what's best for McCain and his people.
Right. Well, we already know of at least some. I mean, mm-hmm. we know of a connection between a number of McCain's top people, including Shinneman once again, I believe, and Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
how's that going to affect what we do and whether we pressure a government down there that in many cases has brutalized some of their people? How's that going to affect our trade policy with them? How's that going to affect the so-called war on drugs, which is a disaster?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to think about all of that, and we know that McCain, it was Peter Madigan, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
was the main guy who had been lobbying for Columbia while being on McCain's staff. We know that Charlie Black has lobbied for pretty much anybody with a checkbook, no mm-hmm. matter how many people they've killed across the world. So, I mean, we know about, and a number of his guys have lobbied. He got rid of Loeffler, who was the top guy lobbying for Saudi Arabia, but other of his guys have too, and we've learned what Bush's O2 close connection to Saudi Arabia, that's really helped us out in the oil department,
right.
Hasn't it?
All that jawboning he was going to do. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, this is a real worry, and this is sort of the point I was trying to make when some of these connections came up. I don't remember when we've been doing this for a while, this segment, but maybe it was a month and a half ago, maybe mm-hmm. 2 months ago, when a lot of this stuff was first coming out, which is, I don't think, just like we can't trust that John McCain's domestic policy will be his own, I don't think we can trust that his foreign policy will be his own, and he's showing it.
Well, he keeps talking about, country puts his country first, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. It's all whatever, his sphere of influence really doesn't seem to reflect America at all.
Yeah, I mean, as is often the case, people call it the Rove playbook, but I'll mm-hmm. take it back to Atwater and before. I mean, it's been the Republicans since their Southern strategy, and, when Richard Nixon was pushing affirmative action projects while he was also going out and purposely exploiting racial fears.
Mm-hmm.
What they say and what they do are entirely not related. And in fact, they often will say something, as we know, from healthy forests to clean skies to leave no child behind. If you look behind the rhetoric, you often find that purposely they're saying the exact opposite. So to me, when I see McCain talk about I put my country first, I immediately assume that he's not.
Right.
Because that's really the point I've come to with these guys, that I assume whatever they're saying, you should probably look in the opposite direction to see what they're really doing.
Or when you hear them accuse, their opponent of something, then you are pretty. That's a pretty clear indication that it's something they're doing themselves.
Yeah, it's a good way to sort of protect themselves
yep.
of doing it. You attack Obama on a variety of things that mm-hmm. make him sound like he's a guy who isn't pushing for reforms, for example, and McCain just jumped off, I think, the third bill that he sponsored that I know about
mm-hmm.
so far, and saying he wouldn't support his own legislation back in 98 to make tobacco companies pay for a lot of the health care costs. One of the first times McCain actually became the so-called maverick and stood up and did something that wasn't down-the-line conservative.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that he's taken his name off and wouldn't support his own campaign finance legislation now or his own immigration legislation.
Right.
So I wonder how many other times John McCain's going to disagree with John McCain.
Mm-hmm. It's been, I don't know, I've been trying to find a new way to talk about John McCain, to be honest with you. I mean, you do a great job of pointing out the hypocrisies, the things or the ambition. And it almost seems like he's just this ball of ambition that will just say anything, do anything to win at any cost. And I just wonder how much of this stuff is really resonating out there. Are we in this trap again as liberals where we analyze everything and we present facts and we're missing the real essence of what people need to understand about John McCain?
We are, the messages need to be delivered properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that what we're saying has 100% merit and is accurate, but the people, and all credit to the Obama campaign, who I've criticized at times in the past, but lately they've been making that argument. They've been, attacking, and criticizing, I would say, John McCain's character where it's deserved by pointing out that he doesn't, he's not a guy of the people who would support, tax cuts for regular people.
Mm-hmm.
He supports them for the wealthiest people and nothing for the middle class. They point out his close connections to big oil. They point out, particularly as it's a big case that's going on here in Ohio, about how he and another one of his lobbyist buddies, his campaign manager, Rick Davis, sought for a Chinese mm-hmm. takeover, of DHL here. They'll send 8,000 jobs out of the country, out of southern Ohio. And he's now trying to come in and talk like he's a regular guy. This
mm-hmm.
people need to know who he is versus what he says. And they need to make sure those messages get out there, and they can do it with television and by, you know, through free and earned media and other methods, you know, because obviously we reach certain people, but we don't have the reach of an Obama campaign.
Right, right. But I think there's something flawed in the way we're talking about it, though. And again, nothing personal about either of us. For some reason, I don't know. I'm not worried about national polls because I don't think those are meaningful. But I just in terms of the narrative and the way it's being played out and the mainstream and the perception of the campaigns, I don't think we've really figured out what it is on McCain yet.
I think the problem is, you know, Jeff, that we're doing as well as some of these lobbyist stories have gotten out there. Mm-hmm. Some of these stories about McCain's temper have gotten out there.
Oddly enough, the story that you let off one of the first times, a story about, you know, him using that C word to describe his wife, that still pops up from time to time. It's amazing.
I mean, I can't tell you how often I hear about it from people now. Mm-hmm. I go to like a local diner here and someone brings it up to me who has no idea that it came from my book and even that I wrote a book on McCain.
Mm-hmm.
So it is out there. It has reached people. And I think that you know, part of the problem here is that that a lot of the Democrats have been squeamish, and that this includes Obama so far, mm-hmm. To a certain degree, not completely, as I pointed out, he's been doing it somewhat, to go after Republicans on character. We've talked about that on this show before, which is if there's legitimate issues there, they need to be raised.
Mm-hmm.
If George W. Bush, if he had been a Democrat, would have lost by 15 points because they would have literally taken him apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, a rich, spoiled brat kid who, you know, most likely, if they'd wanted to look far enough, used drugs, had drunk driving, ran businesses into the ground, didn't show up for military service, you know, was a cheerleader in high school. I mean, this is a guy that would be. Can you imagine the way they showed John Kerry on the windsurfer? There would have been a commercial with George Bush and his pom pom.
Right.
And these pictures were out there of him.
Yep.
And we just don't do that stuff, and it's a problem that for some reason, people on the left don't as often. There are exceptions to that rule. Many good ones, in fact, but don't seem to get it, that campaigns, people can't remember everything, so you've got to figure out how to use images and use sound bites that get across the points that are the truth, quite frankly,
mm-hmm.
about the other side. And again, that's the problem with McCain. I mean, the fact that no one, you know, besides people like myself and you, but nobody in terms of paid media, whether it's independent groups or Obama, has gone after McCain's temperament. If there were the other way around, we know what would happen, and we know that because we saw what George Bush did to McCain going after his temperament and questioning it in the primaries in mm-hmm. 2000. And yet we won't do it.
Right.
We act like that's an off-limits issue.
And we have the roadmap. We have the blueprint. It's already been done for us.
Right. And it's not an off-limits issue. This is a guy that has a dangerously explosive temper. It is a scary temper. It's a temper that's led him to assault people,
mm-hmm.
to use profanity on his wife in public. To assault numerous people of his own party, senators and congressmen. I mean, that is a legitimate issue. Mm-hmm. When senators from your own party talk about the thought of you being president sending a cold chill down their spine because of your temper and how you're going to handle it, and others say, like Thad Cochran did, or former Senator Bob Smith says that he's, you know, that it should disqualify you. These are things that, you know, are important to get out there, and for some reason, we lay off of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it's completely legitimate. It's beyond legitimate. It's important. It's stuff that people need to know when they're choosing who the leader of the free world is going to be, and yet we don't do it. So, you know, I mean, they haven't even really gone after McCain yet on the policy flip-flops, which are so numerous. We've gone over them on your show here, that as to the fact that if we were to name all of them, I'd be here for the next 24 hours probably. And I just don't understand. I find myself again and again every 4 years, you know, in between on smaller races, but presidential, scratching my head.
Again, there seems to be this runaway narrative, and it doesn't really matter what the facts are and how much you dig to present those facts. You're swimming against the narrative. You're swimming against the tide. And the narrative, I mean, as we hear from Broder all the time, they know the real McCain, so it doesn't matter what you and I have to say about
it. Right. Well, that's the reason why you need, particularly when you're fighting an entrenched sort of narrative like the one out there, the BS about his being a maverick, mm-hmm. which to the credit of the Obama campaign, they did go after him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to continue going after him that, and that needs to be echoed by independent groups and echoed in direct mail and echoed by people who are going on talk shows and who are pundits. And, I mean, echoed by talk radio hosts. And, I mean, that's what the right does and does so effectively. You know, when they bring out some ridiculous charge like the tire pressure gauge, You hear it from all of the surrogates. Mm-hmm. You suddenly hear all the Senate candidates talking about it. You hear the presidential. You hear it, you know, Rush Limbaugh. You hear it, you know, on various parts of Fox. And that's what happens. So, I mean, and yet for some reason, you know, we can't just pick an issue. Like, he's not a maverick, and you hit him on one commercial, then you move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be built into an actual campaign. And the problem is, when you're fighting a media that's so hesitant to criticize John McCain, that message has to, it's all the more important that that message be driven by paid media.
Right.
Because campaign commercials will force the media to talk about these issues and to have pundits on to discuss them who can then echo those points, mm-hmm. if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and we have the benefit of the fact that it's true. We don't have to go manufacture this stuff like McCain people have manufactured, you know, the quote honorable unquote campaign that McCain was going to run, where he's going to talk about quote issues unquote.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now he's got Britney Spears and Paris Hilton in the newest one, which is an unbelievably silly ad. And I mean, and that's the campaign. That's an honorable campaign, the John McCain. That should tell you how much honor John McCain has.
Yep.
So that's what they are willing to do, and they're going to constantly do that. The benefit of that we have is that when it comes to McCain's temper, when it comes to his lobbyists, when it comes to his flip-flopping on every issue, when it comes to the fact that he's in bed with Bush on all, mm-hmm. on everything, these are all true.
Right.
And the Bush one, I think the Obama people have done a terrific job of pushing, and I think they're now doing a great job on the big oil and showing how easy corporate interests rule his world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when it comes to pointing out his closeness to lobbyists and his temper, they haven't even done anything with the temper, and I don't even think they're going to.
Right. Well, Cliff, thanks for hanging with us today. Thanks for sticking around a little longer here today. I really appreciate it. I got to take a hard break. Thanks a lot, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
We'll be back after these important messages from our sponsors.
Randy Rhodes at noon, Jeff Barrios at 3, weekday afternoons on 1480 KPHX.
Compound to ask him a few things. She said, for what noble cause did my son have to die? And tell me, where are their weapons? And why did you have to lie? Imagine
that. We are back. That's right. That's Melissa Etheridge. That means a pair of tickets for the first one who calls up and identifies that tune to Ian. Tickets are down here available to you. Give us a call at 602-258-8800, 1-800-989-1480. You know, every now and then a public figure makes a statement so startling and surprising that just going to hang it out there. Apparently, Michael Mukasey has announced that no criminal prosecutions are planned for the former Justice Department officials accused of abusing the hiring practices. And Mukasey told delegates at the American Bar Association's annual meeting, not every wrong or even every violation of the law is a crime. Interesting, huh? Not every wrong or every violation of the law is a crime. Now, how do you tell the difference? How do you know if what you're doing is a crime, even though if it is a crime, whether or not it's against the law? Well, handy guide. If you're a Republican, it's not a crime. As long as Michael Mukasey is in charge of the United States Justice Department. So I hope I cleared that up for you. It's not a crime if you're a Republican. That, according to Michael Mukasey, you know, Chuck Schumer's friend, George Bush's Attorney General, head of the Justice Department. Not every wrong or every violation of the law is a crime. Good to know. Let's go to Julie in Phoenix. Hey, Julie.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Good, good. Did you, Ian says you won some tickets.
Yes, I heard that.
Congratulations.
I am so excited. I've been wanting to see that show.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, with the economy these days, it's hard to afford tickets.
Oh, I know how it is. I haven't been to a concert in a long time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Did you just get a swing on by the station? And probably Erica's the person you want to ask for once you get here to get those tickets. All right?
Yeah, I'll pick those up, and I'll also buy a couple of T-shirts you have down there.
Oh, all right. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you so much.
You take care.
You too.
Bye. All right, we're going to be doing that every hour, probably for the rest of the week. At least one pair of tickets every hour. We may up that as we get later on in the week. We'll see how that all plays out. So not every wrong or every violation of the law is a crime in America. So that's, wow, what a relief, huh? Let's go to Christopher in Phoenix. Hey, Christopher.
Hi, Jeff. Jeff, I really appreciate your show today, and I wanted to just say a few things. I'm a nurse, and I had a wonderful nursing education, and the way this relates to your topic is that nurses are told that they do not get to choose their patients. When they're working in a hospital,
mm-hmm.
they have to treat every patient with respect and dignity, and that's called a principle.
Mm-hmm.
And principles don't change. And our administration in Washington, the president and his cronies, never had a nursing education, so they never learned about principles, and they have everything is situational. And they like to say, in this situation, this is what we're going to do. And in this situation, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And every appointment by this president follows his lead. And every time George Bush sees something, it's something new. And it's always a new situation. And the man has no principles. And he always invents some way to react to this situation. It's called situational ethics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not based in principles.
Well, and again, it was something that the right used to accuse the left of, you know, of being, you know, having this sort of no moral compass. And it's remarkable. Once, you know, put in charge, we see that the excesses and abuses of that are just astounding.
Right.
Thanks,
right.
Christopher. Appreciate your call.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. We'll be back after these important messages from our sponsors. Stick around, folks.
Written, the final page will say,
shut the hell up.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX, joined right now by Chris Gunn, the Director of Communications for the American Small Business League. Chris, welcome to the program.
Jeff, thanks for having me on.
I want to talk to you about a recent piece I saw over there at a Huffington Post that you did, essentially saying that the government has been sort of violating its own laws with regard to contracts for small businesses.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let me start by saying that this issue was first exposed in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
It was started with a GAO investigation that was reported on May 7th of 2003, and since then we've seen about 12 federal investigations into what we call the diversion of federal small business contracts to large corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what we're looking at is the federal government inflating their small business procurement statistics and goals, compliance with those goals, by including Fortune 500 corporations and their subsidiaries.
Wow. So why does the government even earmark money for small business procurements? Why do they have a goal like that? What's the objective of that?
Well, let me say that small businesses are the backbone of our mm-hmm. nation. If you talk to almost any political candidate, they'll tell you that. In terms of our nation's economy, small businesses employ a vast majority of our citizens. They make up 99% of all employer firms. In fact, 98% of all companies have less than 100 employees, which is a small business by most standards.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at a vast majority of employer firms, innovation, and support for our economy comes from small businesses. I think it's very important that our federal government acknowledges that and spends a fair portion of the large amount of money that they spend every year with small businesses. And that's a fairly large amount of money in that mm-hmm. the federal government actually spends about $500 billion a year on procurement. And that's goods and services, anything from paper products and computer products to widgets and weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a kind of a wide variety of products that are purchased by the federal government, and 23% of that should go to small businesses.
Well, obviously, if the government has this program in place, they recognize the value, at least did at some point recognize the value of small businesses in terms of how it affects the growth of this country, and it actually keeps the dollars that it earns in this country for the most part. These large corporations, these multinationals, there was just a report out today that 70-some percent of them don't even pay taxes in this country anymore,
right,
according to our own GAO. So.
Right. No, absolutely. And in some cases, we're actually awarding these contracts to companies that are outside of the United States.
Wow.
So say, for example, BAE or Berman & Vee, which is a large Dutch firm with 27,000 employees in 17 countries.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at kind of a multifaceted problem in that companies outside of the United States who are larger receiving small business contracts, companies within the United States who are large and maybe aren't paying taxes within the United States are receiving small business contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And then in some cases, say, for example, the Blackwater case,
right,
and you may have heard about this. The SBA actually made a determination that 1,000 of Blackwater's employees were actually independent contractors and didn't count towards their small business size determination. And so Blackwater, according to the SBA, is a small business, even though if you counted those 1,000 employees, you might say, they would have 1,750 employees. They'd exceed their size standard by 250.
Mm-hmm. So Blackwater basically set this thing up. They call them all contractors, and that's the loophole by which a lot of this money is funneled to them?
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And the SBA agreed.
Unbelievable. That's just remarkable to me.
Oh, it's one of those things that we've been looking into. I know that the House has been looking into it. I know mm-hmm. that Representative Waxman has been hot on Blackwater's trail, but it's just a classic example of the SBA doing something that's not necessarily in the interest of small businesses.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously you've gotten Waxman on your side. Are there any other steps you're taking to try and get this out there to get people looking into this? Is Waxman our only recourse at this point? Or?
You know, I certainly hope not. Mm-hmm. We've been working pretty hard trying to get this issue out there, and we've worked with a couple of different representatives. We've worked with, say, for example, the Senator Kerry and Senator Snow on the Small Business Committee in the Senate. We've worked with a couple of junior seniors, representatives in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, it seems like the Democratic leadership in the House has some other priorities and doesn't look like they're taking up this issue or small business issues in particular. Or they're not taking them very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've made some progress with the legislators, but that's not to say that we don't need more. we certainly need more attention from our legislators on this issue.
Now, are these just sort of guidelines, or is there any laws being broken here by this sort of diversion of funds?
Well, it's like I said, it's a multifaceted problem. So there are some laws being broken. We actually have a situation where some of these companies are actually misrepresenting themselves as small businesses in order to receive these small business contracts through their subsidiaries in some cases, and in some cases just as themselves. So in that case, we'd actually be looking at felony contracting fraud and mm-hmm. It carries a significant fine, up to 10 years in prison, and debarment from federal contracting for up to 3 years. So we're looking at a situation where there are teeth to and essentially enforcement there, but it's not happening. It's not being enforced. These companies aren't being punished for doing what they're doing. They're essentially being, you know, slapped on the hand and given given more opportunities because the federal government consistently adopts rules and policy changes that allow them to continue to do it.
Now, obviously, there's some teeth to go after companies that are defrauding the government. But how about you know, these agencies within the government themselves that are sort of misusing the law and the procurement policies?
There's really nothing there. As recently as the 1st of July, actually, the Department of Interior Office of Inspector General, which is, I guess, that oversight element within the federal agencies, those inspector generals are there, and oftentimes they're able to expose problems within the federal agencies and kind of expose them to public scrutiny, but that's about it. And in this case, the DOIIG actually found that the Department of Interior was including Fortune 500 firms in their small business contracting goals, and that in some cases their contracting officers were essentially doing it on purpose. They were told to do it one way, they did it another way so they could make their own determination, and because of that we saw companies like Dell and Xerox and John Deere receiving small business contracts from the Department of Interior.
Wow. Is there anything my listeners can do to help learn more about this, get involved, advocate on behalf of small businesses?
Absolutely. Visit www.asbl.com. Visit our Action Center and start writing letters. We need people to get out there and start contacting their senators. We actually need people to get out there and start contacting the presidential candidates as well to bring this attention to them because, you know, bottom of the line, we need the presidential candidate that's going to do the best thing for small businesses, and we need a presidential candidate that's going to change some of these bad policies and some of these bad things that are happening. So we need people to get out there and just raise awareness, talk about this issue. So once again, they can visit our website, www.asbl.com.
I appreciate that, Chris. And again, these candidates are going to be, you know, how many times have you heard a presidential candidate talk about small business being the backbone of our country? You hear it all the time. So a perfect opportunity to actually hold them to that and ask them about this issue. Chris Gunn, thanks so much for being with us today
and Jeff, thanks
letting
so
our
much.
Folks know about this. I'll put a link to your website over at 1480kphx.com.
Perfect.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Jeff.
We'll be right back after these messages. We'll open up the phones for you. 602-258-8800. 1-800-989-1480. Stick around.
Now if we had the power to bring our neighbors home from war, they would have never missed a Christmas. No more ribbons on their door. But when you trust your television, what you get is what you got. Cause when they own the information, oh, they can bend it all they want. That's why we're waiting.
Malloy at 6 p.m. Rachel Maddow at 9. Weeknights on 1480 KPHX.
Trying to turn people into gods when God is in the people. God is in the people. Oh, yeah. God is in the people. Oh, oh, oh.
We are back. God. Let's see. That's Melissa Etheridge, isn't it? There must be another pair of tickets available if we just heard Melissa Etheridge singing here at 20 after on the Valley's Progressive Talk. All you got to do is call 602-258-8800 or 1-800-989-1480. And you got to be able to get down to the station sometime between now and next Monday, August 18th, when Melissa's going to be playing out at the Dodge Theater. So give us a call. Win yourself a pair of tickets. 602-258-8800. So there's a new book out by Dr. Stephen H. Miles, M.D. It's called Oath Betrayed. It's I'd like to read you a quote. Dr. Miles says, unlike the people in Stalin's Soviet Union, no U.S. official risked disappearing into the prison for dissent. Senior State Department and Defense Department official, field commanders, intelligence and FBI officers, and frontline soldiers dissented. They were usually ignored. A few were threatened with administrative sanctions. A few more reassigned. A few requested reassignment. The possibility of dissent makes the silence and complicity of senior and frontline medical personnel in the abuse and neglect of prisoners that much more inexplicable and inexcusable. Again, lots of controversy. In the medical profession, with regard to their complicity to torture. The SEER program, the Survival Evasion Resistance Escape program, designed to help American soldiers and Marines resist these practices, to resist torture, was reverse engineered by American physicians and psychologists, and designed what they called enhanced interrogations. It's torture. They gave it a new word in the marketing department of the Bush administration. But it's torture. And as Dr. Miles points out, there was no threat like there was in Stalin's Soviet Union for these doctors who participated. So why did they go along with it? A bigger question. Let's go to the phones here. Ty in Phoenix, looks like you won some tickets, Ty.
I guess I did. I'm excited.
Congratulations.
I heard her on the radio the other day with Rand.
Yeah, I heard that interview too. She's great.
It was awesome.
Yep.
So we are just going to get my wife to go with me, and we'll make some noise.
All right, great. Well, all you do is get down here and pick them up. Erica's probably who you're going to want to see. I think she's going to be holding the tickets. Maybe Art. I don't know. But just come on down to the station, 824 East Washington, and your name will be on the list.
All right, privilege. Thank you so much.
Man. Good talking
to
you.
Take care. All right, bye.
Let's go to Debbie in Hazlett, New Jersey. Hey, Debbie, welcome
back.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick comment with respect to what McCasey had said, you know, like sometimes it's not a crime.
Right.
Well, when you're in jail and you're raising money for, I guess it's, what is it, muscular dystrophy?
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a chance, why don't you ask Sheriff Joe if he agrees?
Yeah.
You know, and see if you can get him on tape.
There you go. I have one of those little recording devices.
Yeah. Okay, have a good night.
All right, thanks a
Bye.
Lot, Debbie. Not a bad thought. Not a bad thought. Again, Attorney General McCasey says even if it's against the law, violation of the law, it might not be a crime. He gets to decide. It's kind of nice. It's kind of a nice position to be in. You know, we think we're just electing these representatives. We're actually apparently electing kings, dictators. Once they have that office, they no longer feel the need to abide by any of the laws that they were sworn to uphold. And that's how far it's gotten, that the Attorney General of the United States can actually, in front of the American Bar Association at their annual meeting, to actually say some violations of the law do not constitute crimes. I think we're getting back into that, you know. Again, another topic that I keep talking into the ground is we have no language. If violations of the law are not crimes, then what the hell are crimes? How do we define? Do we have to redefine everything? That's essentially the world we live in. Everything is just a redefined. It's a new definition of something that might be something else. Violation of the law may not be a crime. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. It really is. No wonder so many Republicans are trying to lay low, trying to disassociate themselves. But can they really? I mean, can McCain separate himself from the last 8 years? There's a whole list of prominent GOPs, but pretty much almost every senator facing a serious challenge is opting out of the GOP convention in Minnesota. Ted Stevens won't be there. Susan Collins won't be there. Bob Schaefer of Colorado, representative, won't be there. He's running for Wayne Allard's seat. Roger Wicker, Mississippi. John Sununu, New Hampshire. Elizabeth Dole, North Carolina. Gordon Smith of Oregon. Won't be at the GOP convention. They don't want to be seen with John McCain and George Bush and Dick Cheney. It's remarkable. Don't they know it's not a crime if you're a Republican? Let's go to Van in Sun City. Hey, Van.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing today?
Oh, I don't know. Every time I listen to you and then I listen to Mike Malloy, my stomach just drops and I get my heart in my throat, and it's just crazy what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we have to do to change things besides vote. Like I said, voting is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to get active. I've decided to be a poll worker.
Oh, good for you.
So I listen to you and Mike Malloy every day, and I got all these web sites here that I'm out of contact. The last one you was talking about was it ASBL?
ASBL, American Small Business League.
Okay. And I think I might have heard a little bit about that before, about Blackwater. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying that they so-called posing as a small business, or getting away with, you know, saying that they're a small business. And it's just really upset me every time I hear something new every day.
Yep.
And I wish people would, you know, start becoming active, because we really have to save this country. I have younger adults in my family, and also young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't see a future for them unless there's a change. Obama is a start.
Right.
At least get them in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we can, I don't care what they say, that, oh, if you don't, you know, you can't push them and all the rest of that stuff. Once you get in there, you know, I think our power will raise to another level. The progressives and the Democrats.
Yeah,
and the liberals, I really believe that.
I agree with you, Van. I think people who are looking to Obama to solve all their problems aren't really getting you. The idea, what's great about Obama is that he can inspire people to get involved, and that's really what we need, is for a lot more of us to be engaged and aware of what's going on and involved in solving these problems. Hey, Van, I have to take a break. It's bottom of the hour. Thanks so much for your call.
Thanks
for listening.
Bye-bye.
Take care. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors. 602-258-8800, 1-800-989-1400.
What chain reaction would cause an effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain, makes you forgive and forget, makes you change. We'll be right back.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. A new report by the Congressional Budget Office states that the U.S. Will have spent $100 billion on contractors alone in Iraq since the invasion in 2003. $100 billion on contractors. That means one out of every $5 spent has gone to private contractors for the U.S. military. And now the private contractors now outnumber U.S. troops. I saw an estimate today, 190,000 plus private contractors now in Iraq, as opposed to it's about 135,000 troops is what we're at. I was speaking with a friend yesterday. He said he has a buddy who's on a Navy ship. And of all the people out on that boat, only 15 are actually regular Navy. Everyone else out there, a couple hundred contractors. It's all part of the big picture. It's all part of the war service industry. It's all started the fleecing. It's all started this is the reason for the war. Oil, yeah, that's a side benefit. It's not our oil, but it helps the oil companies. The reason for the Iraq war is to have a war in Iraq. It's remarkable. Again, brilliant on some levels. I mean, how better to steal than in the chaos of war? And, of course, you need a complicit Congress to get away with this kind of crap. You know, the Truman Committee, they held 60 hearings during World War II. 60 separate hearings on waste, fraud, and abuse. Yeah, we don't have a bipartisan committee investigating contractors in Iraq. Even though we've dumped $100 billion of taxpayer and future taxpayer money, because, you know, a lot of that was borrowed from the Chinese. Welcome to the shock doctrine. Welcome to the war service industry. Welcome to the new American empire. So Dave in Phoenix. Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, question. Was the attorney general saying that sometimes a crime isn't illegal or how?
Yeah. Sometimes violations of the law are not a crime.
Okay. Because I have to agree with that in some cases.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, what case?
Say, you know, buying crack cocaine.
That's not against the law?
No, yeah. It's against law, right?
Yeah, it's a crime.
Right. But if I buy crack cocaine and I'm a police officer, it's not. I committed a crime, yes, but it's not against the law.
Well, if you're an off-duty cop and you buy crack cocaine, then it's against the law.
Yeah, that would be against the law. Right. But if you know, there's some instances when even though you commit a crime, if you're doing it for the right reason, it's not against the law.
I don't know.
it's kind of a fine line there.
Yeah, but if you're a cop, it's part of a sting. You're not really breaking a law by buying the crack cocaine.
Well,
you're setting up.
Not
really.
I was just thinking of it like that, saying, you know, how people can justify things.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Take care.
All right,
buddy.
Take care.
Bob in Georgia. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
All right, man. How about you?
Pretty good, thank you. I don't know how much these Democrats could take, Jeff. I mean, they're like a punching bag. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's disgraceful. What was the little guy's name that was there before they finally got rid of? What was it, the Attorney General?
Alberto Gonzalez?
Yeah. Remember how insulting and pompous he was and making fun at the committee there, you know?
Yep.
It took a Republican to finally put him in his place. That what's his name? From Pennsylvania finally slapped
Spectre,
him down.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
I mean, they're a joke. I mean, it really is. I mean, what is it going to take for them to make a stand? All this respect they're giving this idiot McCain. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, when are they going to call it like it is? You know.
Yeah. Well, again, they're afraid to use the word liar. You know, they can't bring themselves to point out when someone has lied, blatantly lied to you. We're all gonna look the other way, and or call it a misstatement or something like that. Yeah,
horrible. You know,
I hear you.
It's just disgusting.
Yep.
And here you got this Americans here with this. They had this Dennis Kucinich. He couldn't even get 1% of. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy that stood for everything we need right now. You know what I mean? He couldn't get 1%. Had to run home to defend his seat.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going on with these people in America? 70% want offshore drilling. You know, I mean, can't somebody tell them to muscle up and take it on the jaw every once in a while, toughen up and save and look at the rest of the world, how much better you got it than everybody else, and quit the whining and let's start saving gas, you know? Nobody will tell them anything. Looks like they're going to give them the offshore drilling, too, you know?
Well, yeah, again, people have been, they've poisoned the well on this thing, too, you know? I mean, no one knows what's real anymore. To be honest with you, yeah, 70% believe this offshore drilling crap, even though it's pretty obvious to anyone who's an expert in this field tells you 7 to 10 years before you see a drop of that oil, and it ain't our oil. It belongs to the oil companies who are going to put it on the world market.
Exactly.
Export it, most likely.
And it's not what we need anyway.
Right.
We need to cut back, and we need to, you know, slow our population down, and don't use so much oil. And, you know, it's just nobody says that to them. You know, it's awful.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, did you ever see that old movie, The Last Detail, Jack Nicholson movie?
Yes.
Well, not a great movie. Yep. That's the military to me. That's what I think about when I. A friend of mine's son was going in the Marines, and he took him to see that movie to try to deter him, you know?
Uh-huh. Wow.
But, anyway.
Did it work?
No, it didn't. It didn't do it pretty good. No.
Oh, well. Hey, thanks, Bob. Appreciate your call today, buddy. You take care.
All right.
Jim in Phoenix. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. You know what? I like Obama, but I'm telling you right now, I almost bet you he's not going to win.
How come?
Oh, because for one thing... We gotta get down and dirty, Jeff. I hate to say it, this clean campaign. Oh, we don't want to stoop that. These bastards would do anything, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, even our Democrats. This deal with Blackwater. Why in the heck aren't we arresting people? I mean, come on. Here, me and you play by the rules. Where are we getting?
Yep. Well,
nowhere.
I think the problem is, and again, I think it's back with leadership. Part of the Democratic leadership.
Part of it, Jeff.
Knew about the torture, so they can't complain about that. They knew about the wiretapping. They can't complain about that. Their hands are dirty, too.
Jeff,
that's
put a bag over their heads, and we don't know who we're talking to.
Yep.
They're all a bunch of losers. None of them have. They're so out of touch with reality that it's not funny, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. Do you know what? And I'm sorry. Inspire, I like Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. And this freaking John Edwards, somebody ought to hang him. He done our party in.
Oh, really?
I think so. I mean, it's just the same thing. I mean, they're going to use that against us. Like, what was he doing? What was he thinking? He was thinking with you-know-what. That's what he was doing.
And again, he's not alone. It's probably the same scenario plays out thousands and thousands of times all across this country every single day. That doesn't make it right, but why is it part of the political discussion?
You know, but the run for office, and you know, we want somebody we can trust, and, you know, hey, that didn't look good for us.
No.
I'm telling you that right now.
Well, again, he's not the nominee. I don't understand why the media thinks John Edwards is important to this campaign right now.
Right, and this worthless Karl Rove is going to use it and use it.
Mm-hmm.
And do people know that Karl Rove's father was gay? That's proven.
Yeah, I did know that, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, I did. I knew that, yeah.
Well, why don't we spread that around a little bit? You know, I bet you most of the Democrats don't even know that.
Well, I guess you would have to. I guess most Democrats don't necessarily think being gay is definitely a negative.
But
you know,
Karl Rove stands up there.
Right.
Oh, I'm so clean, and I'm Mr. This and Mr. That. You know.
Yep.
Oh, it just makes me sick, Jeff. People got to wake up. How come we don't have 100,000 people out in the streets protesting the way other countries do? That's what we need to get together, and we need Bush and Cheney should be in prison right now.
I agree with you. I don't think they should get away with it. And I've made myself pretty clear on that.
Why
not
people
for vengeance?
Up in arms over this stuff, Jeff?
I am.
This Blackwater. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. You know, here we are spending billions of dollars And we've got, they lied us into war. I mean, that ought to be enough to take them out right there.
You'd think so.
That book that guy just wrote that about all the documents that he's proven that. They falsified documents.
Yeah, Susskind. Yeah, I got him on later in the week.
Hey, how come the Democrats aren't going crazy? How come our leaders aren't doing anything about it?
We need new leaders, Jim.
Oh, you know what?
We need new representatives.
Nobody's running against them. No other Democrats. First of all, working man can't run because he don't have the money.
Well, you can run clean, Jim, here in this state, and a lot of people do. Hey, we've got to take a break. Jim, appreciate your call. Believe me, man, I share your frustration. We just got to keep fighting back. I don't know what else to tell you. We'll be back after these messages.
That's what you really got to do. Kick 'em in the balls, kick 'em in the balls, kick 'em before they kick you. Everybody now, kick 'em in the balls, kick 'em in the balls. That's what you really gotta do. Kick 'em in the balls.
Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Jeff Farias, and Mike Malloy. Weekdays on 1480 KPHX.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around, folks. Another lovely little story. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, is set to release a report that says, surprise, surprise, most U.S. corporations pay no federal income tax. Most foreign companies that do business in the U.S. aren't paying corporate taxes either. Study says only about two-thirds of American corporations paid zero income tax to Uncle Sam between 1998 and 2005. An even higher percentage of foreign corporations avoided federal corporate taxes. At the same time, says the GAO, these firms had trillions of dollars in sales. Study was requested by Senators Carl Levin and Byron Dorgan, both Democrats. The report doesn't name names, and the agency didn't investigate why corporations aren't paying corporate or income taxes. Interesting. And in George Bush's America, corporations don't pay taxes anymore. Let's go to Jesse in San Diego. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
All right.
You want me to describe in a paragraph or less what's wrong with the Democratic Party?
Sure.
Here we go. How many people voted for Hillary? Approximately 18 million. Obama, 18 million. How many signatures does Kucinich have for impeachment? 100,000.
Yeah.
The rest of my case.
Yeah.
Has anybody heard about the troops in Georgia yet? What's going on? The U.S. troops there?
Just U.S. Supposedly advisors, about 1,000 special forces, supposedly military trainers.
Okay, well, does
also
anybody,
a bunch of mercenaries as well.
Well, does anybody know if they're not captured or their condition or their status? I don't think. You're not going to hear this on the mainstream media. And I would imagine that Putin, with his background in intelligence, is probably right where they struck first, with wherever they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if people are streaming you in Georgia or if you have people listening in Georgia, but I guess the outfit was out of Georgia. So if people start getting notices that something happened to their family members, you might want to call your congressman and ask them what they're doing over there.
That. Boy, have you been following what the hell happened over there? Because it looks like this was pretty much coming from our side.
Yeah,
this whole skirmish.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they went and they launched this attack, didn't really try to take over anything, just bombed the crap out of it, hoping to provoke the Russians. The Russians obviously did what they needed to do to slap it back or to send a message to other republics, don't be trying this stuff. But it looks like there was something that our administration was trying to provoke. For what reason, I really haven't been able to figure out.
Well, I would imagine it's probably a plan that they should have scuttled about a year or so ago once their whole plans went totally south, and you know, I don't know, but you know, it's all, there's oil there, and our troops are there. That's about
Yeah. I mean, there's a pipeline there, obviously. Why a confrontation with the Russians, though? Obviously, there's something more to the to this. You know,
well yeah, the Russians probably looked at. If I were the Russians and I was looking at the whole situation now,
mm-hmm.
why not?
Oh, I understand. I understand what the Russians did. I don't understand what we did.
Oh, well, you know, we were a thorn in their side, and they probably tried to negotiate it out. And, mm-hmm. you know, they are wacky enough to listen to Bush, and now they have nothing.
Right.
And you know, now this also ups the ante for Iran because I think it's pretty much a straight shot through for the Russian military through that area right into Iran. So.
Well, yeah, actually, and what eventually we proved that, you know, other countries in the region, we said we'd help support you and you know, defend you, but when it really comes down to it, we won't. You know, maybe we'll have some advisors there, but you're on your own if the Russian tanks start rolling.
That's right, and what's our media has been reduced to, mm-hmm. you know, cesspool fluid,
right.
and all they report on is some high school antics in this political campaign, and the situation is like borderline totally out of control, and basically you and this aspect of the media are the only ones talking about 1,000 U.S. troops sitting over there, and nobody else has a clue they're there.
Yeah.
Well, I just
And this thing is continuing to be spun in the mainstream as the Russian aggression, and we were somehow helping defend Georgia when it was actually the Georgians who provoked this thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Okay,
thanks,
man.
Jesse.
Take it easy.
Appreciate your call. Barb in Cave Creek. Hey, Barb.
Oh. It's good news week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere.
Yeah.
And blackening the skies. Well, I have a few things. If you speak out and you're really going to tell the truth, you can become Bhutto or Paul Wellstone. So I think part of the strategy, I mean, possibly, of Obama is to kind of just shut up until he can get elected, if he can get elected.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he does start getting outrageous, they'll start pulling out the guns. You know, if you really talk, you don't make it. And if you're really a threat to them, if they perceive you as a threat,
mm-hmm.
they're like little animals. And the other thing is, a lot of questions are now answered why Dennis Kucinich gave his delegates to Obama mm-hmm. in Iowa. And why he dropped out before the Big Five race,
mm-hmm.
As far as Edwards was concerned, and it is disappointing. He shouldn't have run. He should have just shut up.
Yeah, that's the surprising part to me is that you know.
I mean, he knew this.
He knew the stakes.
This
was
ridiculous for him to run.
Yeah.
And you know, he had a perfect excuse. My wife is dying. He had no reason to run.
Yep.
So I was very disappointed, but now I understand why he was doing the things he's doing, because they probably sat him down and said, get the heck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
What the gentleman was just saying, to me, this is all war games. They were all, even Papa Bush, you know, they opened our embassy in China.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, our new capital of the United States. Our new capital building is in, you know, Peking.
Mm-hmm.
I still call it Peking. Anyway, Beijing. And the other thing is that everybody was there. The Russians were there, and they were all having a party.
Mm-hmm.
While they're putting on this war game using, I think the whole thing was, you know, a guess. We confronted them, and I think this was just a way for both sides, the Russians, the New World Order, to show, you know, what they can do to put down a rebellion. We have no army. We Bush dismantled it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a military, you know, and we're like sitting ducks. So, you know, they were just doing their New World Order, look what we can do. so don't mess with us. And we were there to provoke it so the Russians could show how strong they were. I think it's all, it's too much of an inside job. I think they're all in bed together with their New World Order deal. And they create chaos so they can use military force to put it down. It's really scary, but it's,
it's a possibility. I think there are some real geopolitical tensions with the Russians.
Well,
obviously,
yeah,
I mean, we've been trying to provoke them in a lot of ways by trying to pull, Georgia and Ukraine and these groups into NATO, which is essentially as it exists now. I mean, NATO was a reaction to the Warsaw Pact.
Right.
And so why is it around now?
Right. Well, I know. I mean, I just think there's something more going on.
Yeah.
Because the guys, the two of them were slapping at each other on the back.
Right.
While, this war was going on. And why did they time it
during the Olympics
so it would not get coverage?
Yeah.
There's just more going on. And the fact that Papa Bush is over there opening the embassy with Georgie and the party at the embassy was with the Russians and the Chinese. I mean, this was one of those little things you see at night, but they actually, and nobody's reporting on the fact that they opened the embassy in Beijing this week, the American embassy.
Hey, Barb, got to take a break. Thanks for the call, as always.
All right.
You take care. We'll be right back after these important messages. Stick around, friends. Lots more to talk about.
Nations are peaceful nations. Free nations don't attack each other. Free nations don't develop weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, you wicked, wicked monkey!
Sticking around, folks, on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. Joined right now by telephone with Dennis Waitley. His newest book is called The Dragon and the Eagle, China and America Growing Together, Worlds Apart. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks very much, Jeff. It's great to be on your show.
Now, you've lectured all throughout mainland China. You've spent, for the last 20 years, you've spent a lot of time over there. Obviously, a lot of people are looking toward China right now as the hosting the Olympics for the next 2 weeks. So I want to have you on to talk a little bit about your understanding of China and what you perceive as our relationship to them. I guess my first question is, should we be afraid of China militarily, economically? Should Americans fear China?
Well, I think we should fear them economically because we need a wake-up call. There's no, they're already the biggest manufacturer by a point. We used to be, and their gross national product growing about 9%. They're holding a lot of our debt paper. And the good, the problem is I don't think any political leader is going to be able to bring jobs back to Ohio or Michigan unless we get into some entirely new kind of industry. And we, usually we're entrepreneurial enough to figure something out, but I think we're kind of like the bullfrog that's being boiled a degree at a time, and we're stewing in the juice, and we're we kind of don't know what's happening. I mean, they're building a city the size of Philadelphia every 60 days.
Wow.
So they're moving 2 million people about every 2 months from the rural areas to the urban areas. Now, they got a lot of problems. You have to be honest about that. And if you go over there enough, you know what the smog is like. You know what the 30% of the world's cigarettes are consumed there. You know they have to dump the garbage somewhere. And, the water is polluted. And it's there's a lot of people. And there's a lot of people in the rural areas who don't have any money or any way of getting any money, and there's about 800 million of those. Wow. Nobody ever talks about the 800 million that are having their land taken back, put into factories, put into high-rises, And then they have to go further further into the rocky, higher elevations to farm. And it's very difficult. You can't even use a tractor. You have to do it all by hand. And so I think about 20 years from now, after they reach the pinnacle of the great economic power in the world, they may have another revolution.
Wow.
I mean, they could, because 800 million people who are hungry and 400 million people who are middle class, or let's say 300 million middle class and 50 million with a lot of money. Right now, there's 300 million Chinese that have over 50 grand cash in the bank. That's it. That's
wow. That, I mean, that's wow.
That's like our entire population with 50 grand in the bank.
Holy cow.
And they, well, that's because they saved nearly 30% of their take-home pay, no matter how impoverished they are. So I'm over there just kicking the tire, looking around, and I went on the board of the only American-owned university there, right in the middle of China, and 17,000 students all learning English, and I just quietly have been in and out of there lecturing and listening. And, you know, I don't tell them how to do anything because I don't know how to do anything, but I sure want to learn so I can figure out what to tell my kids and grandkids how to behave.
Because obviously our financial relationship with China over the last 10-20 years, we've borrowed quite a bit of money from China, and much of the goods and products we use every day are now manufactured in China. We are very, very much dependent on that country.
We are. Right? We definitely are. And the other thing, Jeff, that's really scary for me is that looking at the universities, you know, they're not as good as our universities, but they're getting better, and they're graduating nearly a million technology graduates, which means math, science, physics, high tech. We're graduating 60,000.
The very fields that we're sort of lacking in lately. Fewer and fewer kids are interested in science.
I know, and this presents a problem for a country that's had most of the patents and most of the high tech breakthroughs have been over here. Now, if you take India and China, put them together and get a little software going, maybe they could get inventive, maybe get a little creative, get out of the box, you know, not all have to be synchronized together, but maybe a few of them start thinking independently. You're going to get somebody who's creating the technology, manufacturing the technology, and then using it in a middle class that creates their own market. And we may be out there in left field saying, why didn't somebody tell us, or why didn't somebody do something, or... And that's what I'm most concerned about, is that we're kind of going along, Pied Pipering, going along, and we may become a giant England, which would, and I say that, you know, my mother came from the United Kingdom, so it's not a slam, but, you know, all the great empires have their day, and I'm not suggesting we're like Rome, but I'm suggesting we may take a back seat and wonder why we can't protect our standard of living.
Well, obviously, you've spent a lot of time and seen China up close. I mean, what kind of things do you recommend? What kind of things should our country be doing and looking toward to be able to maintain a mutually beneficial relationship with China?
Well, one of the things we really need to do is kind of sober up and get the eye of the tiger in terms of trying to figure out what we can make in this country that's competitive, and right now we still have a slight technology edge. And if there's any way that we can motivate our young people to say, if you want to be entrepreneurs and you want to make some real money, you're not going to be able to just make it in songs and movie and American Idol and financial instruments, because we need to be a manufacturing economy, not just a service economy. We have to be. And so I think the pressure needs to be put on, the leaders need to put pressure on education and families. And I'm really trying to tell the families, you know, give your kids roots and wings instead of loot and things. I mean, don't try to buy their affection because you're not spending time with them, and really get them to delay gratification more. Put your kids on allowance. When they go to college, give them a debit card instead of a credit card. And, you know, stop trying to pay them off so that they think that just because you're born in America, it gives you a ticket to, you know, the gold medal. It doesn't. And I think the other thing is we need a lot more discipline, and they need a lot more critical thinking and creativity. So they need freedom of expression, which they don't have. Right. And we've got so much that we're lacking a little bit of the discipline that it might take to delay the gratification enough to get ourselves skilled for what's going to be the real 21st century ball game. The other thing I might say, Jeff, is that I've been going into most of the high school, junior highs and high schools there.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back to school. They go from 7 to about 4 p.m., and then they eat a little bit, and then they go back to school from 6 to 9.
Wow.
And what they do from 6 to 9 is their homework, which is supervised, no question. That's the way their society is. But they also do their athletic sports, and they do art, and they do their music. And, at first I think, okay, they're very much regimented and repressed. Then on the other hand, I realized that with 27 million people in some of the city, 25 million, 27 million, they have 100 cities over a million people each. If the youth were left to their own devices on the streets,
mm-hmm.
they probably would have a crime problem, or they may even have a gang problem, or they may have a just hanging around problem. But what they do is keep them busy, and by keeping them busy, they eliminate a lot of the kind of activities that cause problems over here. So they're very impoverished, many of them, but the crime rate is very low. Considering the impoverished areas in which they live, you know, stealing and vandalism, very, very low there. But right. You would guess why, you know, you take you in a rock quarry and shoot you.
Right,
or
right. No, the penalties. Or
no due process. I think there's even a mobile killing van over there. You got to be really careful. They might go to the wrong condo and you happen to be a visitor there and they say you're the one that may die today. They've got a mobile...
That's frightening.
Yeah, a mobile injection van.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
that makes it a little easier to get rid of people who've committed a crime. It's not much due process there.
Right.
Rambling on a little bit, but I'd like to get back to
Essentially, it seems like you're saying the central message or the key point of the book is that, you know, there's a lot of things we can learn from the Chinese in terms of disfocus and discipline. And there's things that they can gain from our society too. Is
they really
freedom
can.
And innovation. I mean, you need, there's a certain level of freedom that spurns innovation. Regimented societies tend not to innovate.
Exactly, and that's really true. We've seen that in our society. When mm-hmm. you free will a little bit, you can get in a group. And I do that with students. I put them in a group, give them a compass, give them a safety pin and a piece of string,
mm-hmm.
and a match. And I say, what do? You're on a deserted island. And they say, well. Is there any book that you can read? Is there any instruction, safety book? And I said, nope, you're on your own. What do you do? And they said, well, I don't know. We send an SOS. I said, what? Is there a ship on the horizon? So what they haven't learned to do is think out of the box,
mm-hmm.
off the wall, and that's what creativity is. If we could give them some of that, and I'm sure they'll bring a lot of it back from our universities back there now, not that they're higher-paying jobs, but if we could learn more discipline and put the discipline back in a little bit. I don't mean forced discipline. Mm-hmm. I mean self-discipline, starting with families, maybe asking a little more from their children rather than trying to mollycoddle them a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. maybe making them clean their rooms without paying them for cleaning their rooms. You know, mom doesn't get paid to cook, so mm-hmm. you don't get paid for cleaning your room. What do you get paid for? Extra work.
Right.
But, you know, those kinds of things would be very important because I see the dedication that the very young people have. And their idea of a good time is to go out and have dinner and talk about success. Well, I couldn't do that in the United States and get three people unless I gave away a car.
Right.
But in China, I can get 3,000 teenagers to come listen to old man. And that's why I lecture over there. They like old people.
Right. They respect yeah. wisdom and time. Yeah, amazing.
I can't even find my car keys, but they think I've got wisdom.
Wow. Amazing. Dennis Whately, the book is called The Dragon and the Eagle, China and America Growing Together, Worlds Apart. Dennis, thanks so much for being with us today. Really, really great talking with you.
Hey, Jeff, thanks a million. I appreciate it.
You take care.
Thanks.
Bye. We'll be back after these messages. We'll open up the phone lines at 602-258-8800, 1-800-989-1480. See you in a bit.
We better run. Run it through the mystic night. Run until the day comes away. Day comes away. Day comes away.
Big trouble.
In little China.
The
Valley's Progressive Talk, streaming live at 1480kphx.com.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around. 22 after on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX. Apparently, George Bush is trying to, weaken the Endangered Species Act to make it itself extinct. The administration wants federal agencies to decide for themselves whether highways, dams, mines, other construction projects might harm endangered animals and plants. These new regulations, which, by the way, doesn't have to go through Congress, reduces mandatory independent reviews that government scientists have been performing for the last 35 years. Interior Secretary Dirk Kempthorne said Monday that the changes were needed to ensure that the Endangered Species Act would not be used as a backdoor to regulate gases blamed for global warming. Unbelievable. Again, this is what we've seen is the ongoing attack on reality, as I talk about all the time with the corruption and bastardization of our language, to an outright attack on science and fact. And again, Bush only has, 162 days left in office? But he seems pretty damn determined to disable and disrupt and dismantle our government in that amount of time. Who knows? He might start a war with Russia. He might start a war with Iran. They may be a country that's not even on our radar that he has designs on. Who knows? How much more damage can this idiot do in 162 days? And it doesn't seem like there's anyone in Congress that seems to have the will to stop him or even slow him down at this point. Let's take a call. George and Gilbert, you're on the air. Hey, George.
Hey, Jeff. How are you, man?
Good.
First off, I want to say, throughout my travels today, I meet some interesting people with some interesting comments, and it's refreshing to drive home to get a good sense of reality that there's other people, not only in Phoenix, but throughout the country who call your show that give me a little bit of hope. So I want to say that.
Well, thanks
very much.
Thank you.
And, in regards to China, I think what they're doing or not is that they're putting the emphasis on middle class. Middle class starts with education.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't educate our youth, then they roam free. The old proverb, the night old mind, the devil's playground, well, that's exactly what you get. Why we don't spend on education, but we spend on some other industries, like war, for example,
mm-hmm.
We would graduate more. We'd lift up our middle income. And what we do is we would quit competing with old technology. I mean, we give them 20, 30 years to catch up to our technology, perfected, lessen the labor and the materials and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to compete against that? We have to generate new industries and be the leaders in that to get that going.
Well, I don't know, George, if you've been watching any of the Olympics since that started on Friday, but every outdoor shot, you look at Beijing, and there's this white haze that covers everything. Okay?
Yeah.
Here's an industry that could be a growth industry for America because the Chinese are going to need it. So how do you deal with air pollution?
Absolutely.
Do you deal with clean energy? If we were to take care of that, if we were to be the leaders in that kind of technology, the whole world would be not banging down our door to get
their
hands on it, including
the
Chinese.
Remember the Kyoto Treaty when Bush stood up there
yes.
years ago and he said that he wouldn't sign that
mm-hmm.
treaty because it would do financial hardship to American corporations.
Yeah.
Just imagine if we had mandated that, if we had put some, some of our dollars into that technology, where we'd be today, we would be the leaders and the pioneers.
Yep.
And we would create innovative technologies that we would be the leaders in. We wouldn't be playing catch-up. We would be setting the pace for the film.
Exactly, so. Exactly. And again, just look at those images from China and imagine, you know they want to clean that air up. You know they want to,
And in regards to the Bush, why doesn't someone take the old, like the bartender or the tavern policy to Congress? And that is that if you give that drunk more drinks and he goes out and kills somebody, you're liable.
No,
well, they're
kidding.
Giving him the keys to the vehicle.
No
drive
kidding.
Out
yeah,
there.
Where our laws, the ones that are that are crimes, are pretty much meaningless against this administration. We're tougher on bartenders than we are on people who allow for destruction and murder.
Yeah, and murder exactly on a wide scale, global scale.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, George. Appreciate your call. Brings up an excellent point. Again. I go crazy with this stuff. I honestly do. Basic things like justice in this country. Laws being laws. Words having meaning. So is that too much to ask? That laws, violating a law is a crime that the Attorney General of the United States would understand? By definition, what laws mean, what crime is. Is that too much to ask, really? I don't think it is. Only 162 days left. How much more of a mess are they going to make, really? And then the real work begins. I don't envy, I don't envy Obama, were he to win this thing, even with a, where it looks like he's going to have a pretty large margin in the House and a hopefully a veto-proof majority in the Senate. Even with all that working in his favor, it's going to be hard cleaning up this mess. We all got a lot of work ahead of us. Be right back.
And he lies, he just looks you straight in the eye. And he lies about everything, lies every day. If it weren't for the lies, he'd have nothing to say. He lies and he lies and he lies. To lie takes a liar, as to steal takes a thief. To lie to the whole world takes a liar in chief. He lies and he lies and he lies. He lies and he lies and he lies. He must despise all the what fors and whys. The way he lies and he lies and he lies.
Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those that trespass against us. Although them again we will never, never, never trust. Them not know what them do. They go to yai while I'm sticking like glue. Blinking green while they're plotting for you.
We are back. Thanks for sticking around, folks, on the Valley's Progressive Talk, 1480 KPHX, joined in studio by our good friend Emily DeRose, Communications Director for the Arizona Democratic Party. Emily, welcome back.
Thank you. I love it when I come. You guys play the best music. I have the most fun. I'm so glad to be here.
Has it been a month already? I can't. We were just talking.
It's insane. I feel like I opened my eyes and, I was here a week ago.
It's about to get a lot crazier, though. Convention's coming up. How are plans going for the trip to Denver?
Oh, it's going to be absolutely extraordinary. We had a big event with Governor Napolitano and Jim Peterson for our entire delegation over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Everybody is incredible. Excited. They couldn't be more energized about seeing Barack Obama take the nomination, deliver a speech to 76,000 Americans in Invesco Field. I mean, we have a delegation that is incredibly motivated and committed. And we kind of have a delegation that's in an unusual position. We have the opposing party's presidential nominee who is at least nominally from Arizona, you know, John McCain, Republican flyover.
He married into an Arizona family, right?
He did. Yeah. He did. So so I think that our delegation is going to have a very, very interesting opportunity to sort of inform the rest of the country about exactly who John McCain is and exactly why he would be a bad choice for the rest of the country.
And now, the governor was in on the Obama campaign pretty early. I mean, she endorsed really early. Were there a lot of her people involved in organizing the convention and the planning as well? Or?
You know, I don't know that they were organized or involved in the organization of the convention. Mm-hmm. I know that she was involved, actually was chairing the platform drafting committee.
Cool.
Incredibly cool. And what is really cool about that process is that Barack Obama, for the first time ever, opened up the platform process to Americans of all walks of life. Mm-hmm. So I know that here in Arizona, we had a whole bunch of platform meetings, some events where there were 100 people, 90 people, really seriously drafting some ideas to submit to the platform. And then luckily, Governor Napolitano put Arizona center stage and put together a document about renewing America's promise.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Again, John McCain running from Arizona. What's going on at the state party level? You guys looking at some of the stuff he's about these days? Or?
Oh my goodness! I mean, we're always looking at what he's about. And what's been interesting for us in the last few weeks with John McCain is that there have been some polling numbers come out that have just been all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been talking about just why he's vulnerable in Arizona. I mean, he's vulnerable here because he's vulnerable everywhere. He's taking this country in the same direction as George W. Bush has taken us for the last 7.5 years. But he's vulnerable here. He didn't even get 50% of his own party's vote in his primary. His polling numbers are much lower than you would expect for someone who is represented a state for more than 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's been running for president most of the time, so I hesitate to say that he represented Arizona.
Well, he hasn't been voting on behalf of Arizona.
Oh, my goodness. No, the last time I checked, his voting record was he was missing 63% of the votes in the Senate.
Wow. Unbelievable. And yet has the nerve to stand up there and chastise Speaker Pelosi because they're not in sick for taking further on recess right
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. And has, in fact, missed some critical votes for Arizona. I mean, you know that solar power plant down in Gila Bend that would power 70,000 homes, create 1,500 jobs? They need a renewable energy tax credit to be extended before they can build it. It's this partnership with APS and another company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John McCain keeps missing the vote on extending this renewable energy tax credit. He's preventing Arizona from taking the next step into the 21st century and really weaning ourselves off of foreign oil.
Wow. And our economy needs it. We need it desperately.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Especially in some of those outlying communities where jobs are really, really hard to come by.
Wow. Now, we also had some national Republicans come into the state, you were telling me.
We did. Senator Tim Bee had yet another Bush acolyte in his backyard stumping for him, a guy named Tom Cole, who is essentially the head of the House Republican Campaign Committee, came to raise money for Tim Bee today.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Cole was on another radio station. I won't say which one because this is my favorite. but he said that the GOP is certainly not a one-trick pony on energy, and I laughed and thought, well, then maybe you're a one-trick elephant on energy.
Yeah, what's the other trick?
Exactly. This is a guy who's taken $300,000 from big oil companies for his campaigns over the course of his career, has voted against measure after measure, responsible, serious proposals to end our dependence on foreign oil, to help solve the issue in the short term and the long term, and he has the gall to say that the GOP isn't a one-trick pony on it. You know what really makes me mad about it, too, is that these guys had unified control of government for 6 years. And you know what they did? They kept sending money big oil's way, and now they're having their little talk-a-thons in Congress saying that that's lowering gas prices. It's just absurdity to me, and I am sure the American people see through that.
I hope so. I just saw some disturbing numbers that, I don't know, it was like up in the high 60s were in favor of the offshore drill here. Drill now thing that they're throwing out there.
Well, so. I mean, I think economists and energy experts have been pretty clear about what it would mean to drill here, drill now, that maybe 7 years from now we would get a couple cents off off a gallon. But more importantly, I think that the efforts in Congress to encourage oil companies to drill on the land that they actually have leases for, the 68 million acres that they've got, is a very, very reasonable proposal that Republicans continue to reject. And doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep. Another another one of our quote unquote representatives in the pocket of big oil, John Shattuck.
Yes.
You've been taking some aim at him as well lately, right?
He's so easy. He's such an easy target. He gives us these. With John Shattuck, I feel like every day is early Christmas. I mean, it's fantastic. The other day, John Shattuck said he was bored being in Congress. Then he said he wanted to run for the Senate. Then he claimed that his speeches were lowering the price of gas.
magic wand that George Bush has been looking for.
I just wanted to know why he waited so long.
No kidding. Yep.
So we launched a little website called ShaddegForSenate.com. That's ShaddegForSenate.com. And we're giving him some suggestions on things he might want to run for if his job is so boring to him. He could run for student council vice president, a member of the HOA board.
There you go.
There's plenty of stuff out there if his job is boring. If fixing our energy crisis, solving the healthcare problem, and putting America back on the right track, not interesting enough for you?
Boy, if he thinks the House is boring, wait till he spends a little time over in the Senate. My God. Wow. Shattuck thinks the House is boring. Well, luckily, we got a good candidate, Bob Lord,
who's running a really
good campaign against Shattuck.
And Bob is out there knocking on voters' doors every weekend, making phone calls to voters. So I really encourage folks to get out there and volunteer for Bob Lord, because John Shattuck really is among the worst of the worst as far as the Republican caucus goes.
And the Republicans that's one of their targets is to keep Shattuck's seat. I think they see a real threat from Bob Lord up there and hopefully he can pull it off. I know the numbers aren't necessarily in his favor in terms of registers, but that's changed quite a bit. And in a year when the vast majority of Americans are fed up with what the Republicans have done to us.
And luckily in Arizona, we have voters who are willing to listen to reason. I mean, with a Republican voter registration advantage, we elected a Democratic governor and attorney general. I mean, we've had incredible electoral success with people who have smart solutions and listen to voters and are just smart, moderate voices. And that's what Bob Lord is.
Yep. And we've seen a pretty significant change in voter registrations as well. I mean, we're up, like 40 grand or something?
Absolutely.
Since
we're about 85,000 up since November of 2006. I mean, it's striking. We have outpaced Republicans and independents combined.
Wow.
So for all of you who are out there registering your neighbors, we really, really appreciate it. That helps out quite a bit. And I'd like to challenge you to register some more Democrats. I mean, we've really got an opportunity here this year.
Yep, and the deadline is what, October 2nd, I think, for the general election. I think so.
We still have some time
to get in the general. Anything statewide races? Anything that we should be looking for or looking toward?
Keep looking toward the state legislature. I mean, we're really focusing on making sure that we can put that body too in the hands of people who are not extremists, who aren't going to waste time talking about guns in cars, guns in bars. Guns in schools.
And
we have great opportunities there. So what those legislative candidates really need, though, is people phone banking, knocking on doors, and we have headquarters all over the state, all over Maricopa County, where people can come in and give us one night of your week. Give us one night to help turn Arizona blue.
Are they out there tonight? They're working tonight?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I myself make calls every single day. I mean, I work just as hard. I know those calls are important. Mm-hmm. So do a sheet of calls a day.
So all I got to do is go down to Democratic headquarters. The closest one to here is right over there, Central and Thomas.
Yep, the northwest corner.
Where are the other offices?
Oh, geez.
Off the top of your head? Or?
Off the top of my head, the West Valley office is on, I think, 75th Avenue in Peoria. There's the Gem Dems office in the East Valley.
On Main Street in Mesa.
Yes,
right. And they just opened a Tempe office
open a Tempe office last week. I haven't had a chance to be there yet. But if you call us at headquarters, we will direct you to wherever is closest so that you don't have to use a lot of that $4 gas to get there. And our phone number is 602-298-4200, or you can visit us on the web, www.azdem.org.
So all they got to do is show up. They'll get a script. They'll get a phone call list. They're calling mostly Democrats and Independents at this point.
We're calling all sorts of people. Okay. We're calling all sorts of people. We want to make sure that we talk to as many Arizona voters as we can. Mm-hmm.
And you're in a room with lots of other like-minded people. It's actually a fun thing to do,
it's
being part of one of those phone banks. There's snacks
fun.
Around.
Just... we have maracas, actually.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Great.
So that's a great way to get involved. Just go down, donate an hour to the Democratic Party, making some phone calls, making voters aware. It's, you know, voting's not enough. We have to get involved.
Exactly.
Really have to turn this thing around.
This is the year to do it.
Yep. Any last words you want to leave our listeners with before I let you go?
No, I mean, I just want to remind them that we certainly think that every election up and down the ballot in Arizona is important, from the presidential race to state legislative races to school board races. So thank you all for all you do, and come on in and do some more.
Thanks, Emily. Emily DeRose, Communications Director for the Arizona Democratic Party. Talk to you again next month. We'll be back after these messages.
The one who says there's life after this. Now tell me, how much more open can my mind be? You are my one and only. Oh, la, la, you are my one and only. Oh, I'm singing, you are my one.
Stephanie Miller at 6 a.m., Tom Hartman at 9, weekday mornings on 1480 KPHX.
Back. Hey, who is that we were just listening to? Oh, that's right. It's Melissa Etheridge. I know, if you weren't listening before, here's the deal. Anytime you hear a Melissa Etheridge song as a rejoinder or bumper music on this program this week, give us a call. You win yourself a pair of tickets to see Melissa Etheridge on the 18th of August. That's next Monday night at the Dodge Theater. So give us a call at 602-258-8800. First caller to let Ian know you want those tickets gets those tickets. I've given up on trivia questions. I ran out. I realized I had a lot of tickets to give away, and I was going to run out of relative facts pretty quickly. So give Ian a call, and a pair is yours. Also, hey, want to let you know, I'm going to get arrested on Thursday. No, I didn't do anything wrong. It's part of the Muscular Dystrophy Association's fundraiser. Jerry's Kids, you're familiar with this. It's every Labor Day weekend. They have the big telethon. Well, here's what they're doing locally. A bunch of different athletes, sports figures, political people from around town are going to get picked up and arrested Thursday in the morning. And it's up to my friends, you folks out there in the listening audience, to go my bail for me, to spring me. And you can do that by visiting 1480kphx.com. Go to my little section of the website. There's a link that takes you to the MDA website and the promotion for this whole plan. And make a small or large contribution. It's up to you. And the sooner I make my goal, the sooner I get sprung from jail. So I'll hope you participate in that very good cause. Let's take a phone call here. Karen in Phoenix. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Jeff.
How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Doing well. Rumor has it that you won some tickets.
Yes, I did. That's awesome. I love Melissa. She's great.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, she's a great songwriter,
and I love
great
you
performer.
Guys.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Karen. All you got to do is stop down here at the station, 824 East Washington Street. You know where we are? Have you been down here before?
Yeah, I've been there two or three times.
All right. Well, you park in the back. That's the easiest way to get in here because it's a little tricky out there with all the light rail construction. So come on down and say hello.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Karen. Congratulations.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Let's go to Frank in Tempe. Hey, Frank.
Hey there, Jeff.
It's on your mind.
It's been a while since we spoke. There's a guy, I don't know if I got his name right. I think it may be David Bender that is on the Rachel Maddow show sometimes. And he was on, whoever it is I'm talking about, he was on In Her Place.
Mm-hmm.
And put forth an idea that I think was a really good one. You know how they have hammered the phrase so much that it's just a part of our thinking that tax and spend liberals, right,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How those have become associated. Well, he was putting forth that we have had so many lies from Republicans for so long now that we start doing the same sort of association with the Republican Party. And he had a good little phrase for it, which was the party of Pinocchio.
Uh-huh.
And just start hammering that so that people go, oh, yeah, Republicans, that's the guys that lie all the time.
Right. Yeah, I like that. I think, you know, whenever I hear that tax and spend crap, it's, well, you know, at least it's more honest than borrow and spend, because at least you're taking responsibility for the things you're spending on rather than dumping it on your children.
That's a good point. And with what they've done to our economy, I don't see how they can stand on a high horse
mm-hmm.
about liberals being out to, you know, to borrow and to borrow and spend.
Yep.
Or to tax and spend.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, again, I just think we need to do a much better job at these labeling, at the the message. You know, not just the frame, but how we actually present ideas and how we word them.
I think
the Democratic Party does a terrible job at that.
I agree. And you know what the Republicans are doing so much these days is whatever is a strength and a truth, they declare that it's a weakness.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, he's the most popular celebrity in the world.
It's
a bad thing that people like
Obama
and flock to see him.
The truth is, John McCain would have loved to have had that number of people come out and see him.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why he has to go to places where there are already crowds. Like, he has to go to Sturgis because, you know, there'll be 40,000 bikers hanging out.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But you can't get 40,000 people to go see John McCain.
Yeah, and he can pretend that they came to see him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate your call. Mike over in Gilbert. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good.
Doing pretty good myself. I actually am a conservative,
mm-hmm.
and I am very excited to find your radio station. Actually, I found it about 2 months ago, 3 months ago. Been listening to it pretty religiously as I drive home, and it's interesting. It's exciting to see what the other side thinks, I guess.
Well, thanks, I think.
Well, you know, the best thing for me is that I listen to you guys talk, and I guess, I don't know, I just figure that who's going to really believe this stuff?
Like
it's
what?
Just all, well, I was sitting here, I'm driving in my car, I'm writing down a list of all the things that I would like to talk about, but the list became so long.
Well, start at the top. Give me one of them.
For example, I'm a petroleum engineer. I worked overseas. I worked in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about this issue, the energy issue, it just seems to me like it's so replete with misinformation and misleading, I guess I would call them talking points.
Well, you know, what was my talking point today that was misleading?
7 years. Okay, 7 years. I was on a field down in South America, high-profile mm-hmm. field, from the first spud of the first well to actual production on a very difficult oil field to drill. It took us 3 years. And this is in a South American country where mm-hmm. the technology is so backwards compared to ours. It took us 3 years. I was only there for about a year and a half, and we were producing. The other thing you mentioned is 60 million acres out there that we could drill in now. Well, I'll tell you, I have some experience with the leasing, how the government grants those leases and how they work, and they're not out there saying, okay, this 68 million acres has oil. You guys go drill. They award those to oil companies, and oil companies pay for them, and they hope that someday they can have the exploration or the seismic surveys and all that other stuff.
So you're telling me that oil companies buy land without knowing that whether or not there's any oil under it?
Well, there's some kind of speculation to it. I mean, oil drilling is a speculative venture. You never know, and when you have a supply and demand situation that requires you to be decades ahead of the curve, mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are out there. And they buy it on the thought that someday they can go out and really take a look. But a lot of the rules and regulations that have been passed since they originally got those leases precludes them from going out and actually doing the seismic work and doing the exploratory analyses that are required. And I hear those things, and I hear them over and over and over again, and I guess I'm telling you they're not correct. And I'm wondering if you know they're not correct and you're just throwing that out there.
No, actually, because everything I've read and looked at the subject, I hear that, you know, most people in the industry say it's like 7 or 10 years to develop a site before it starts producing oil. That, again, I'm not, you come on here and like accuse me as if I'm trying to lie about something like this, Mike. Unfortunately, Mike, call me back, and I can hear by the music I'm just about out of time. I'd love to have a more lengthy discussion with you on this. Please call me back at another time. We can talk at greater length. I got to get out of here, unfortunately. Ian Huff, thanks to everything you heard came through his nimble fingers. Thanks to Ian. Thanks to all the hardworking people at 1480 KPHX who keep this thing alive. Thanks to all our sponsors. Without them, there is no radio station. Thanks to all my guests from today's program, everyone who called in to share their thoughts and ideas. A shout-out to democracyinteractive.com. Stop into that chat room and say hello. I'll be back tomorrow with lots more. Mike Malloy's up next. Have yourselves a great evening.